Hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Grillin' JR with the voice of wrestling, Mr. Jim Ross. Jim, how are you, man?
I'm good. I'm in Oklahoma, as you might be able to tell with the background in my little office in Norman. So it's been good. I had a busy week last week. Boy, a lot of flying, man. It's hard to get to from Jacksonville to Portland, Oregon, unless you're just really patient. 5-hour flight. Then I flew on Saturday. I flew from Portland to Seattle and connected from Seattle on Alaska Airlines to Oklahoma City. So I've been here since Saturday afternoon and watched the football, obviously watched the Jags game. Man, what a game that was.
Unbelievable.
You know, I had a gut feeling, Conrad, this is going to sound, you know, front runner stuff, kissing Tony Khan's ass, stuff that we all do. what the hell? It's truth is truth. You know, you got to take care of your boss. And I felt so good about it. I had tears in my eyes when that game was over. And here's why. I've gotten to know Mr. Khan pretty well. And I know how much he's committed. You know, I don't know how many million he spent in free agency. But it was huge money, more than anybody else. And the GM picked the right selections to bring in. They bolstered up the receiving core. They gave Trevor Lawrence some guys to throw to that could actually catch the ball and make touchdowns. So I was really moved by that because I know how much he was dedicated to this damn thing, not just in the dollars. I mean, the guy's worth $8.2 billion. So signing, you know, several million to these free agents didn't bust the bank, but it's a hell of a commitment. So I was really happy for their family, and I'm glad that they got a lot of positive feedback and exposure. I'm thinking about going to the game Saturday. I'm not sure if I'm going to go or not, but I'm thinking about it. They take care of me real good, so I may do that because it's going to be another raucous, crazy full house because of the playoffs. Playoffs. It's good. Good weekend. And, of course, as we're recording this on Monday morning, the big SEC versus Big 12 matchup is tonight.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun. I do want to mention that the Jaguars are maybe one of the feel-good stories of the year in the NFL, especially what they overcame with the whole Urban Meyer disaster.
Yeah.
And how they bounced back from that has been really impressive. But even more impressive, I think you were just quoting the old net worth of Mr. Khan from maybe when you first signed. Yeah. My man's worth $11.5 billion now. So things are good in the Khan family.
Good. Let's go to lunch, Mr. Khan.
Yeah, lunch is on him.
I got a spot. and you know what? He's such a nice man. I'm not saying that just if you knew him, there's JR. He's going off again. He's kissing ass. Well, maybe I am. That's what you want to think. That'd be about as bright as Tommy Dreamer's statement last week that got a little stretch. My generation doesn't know how to bring people together and talk and solve problems. That doesn't have an age barrier, by the way. I think that, when you got to know the man, he's super. He's always asking about my cancer treatments and all these things. He cares about the individual. And I was just, the look in his face in the locker room and on the field was heartwarming to me because I know the guy, and that's a hell of an investment, Conrad. That's big time. That's kind of like what you pay Shivani and Bischoff and all those guys.
Listen to you. By the way, I agree with what you're saying about Mr. Khan. I actually met him years before AEW was a thing. I do a lot of business, or used to do a lot of business with a big bank down there in Jacksonville, Florida Capital, and wound up meeting him there. I think he was maybe on the board or something at the time, and it was crazy all these years later when I'm doing a podcast with Rick and become friendly with Tony. It's like, man, what a small world it is. And if you're not careful, man, it'll slip up on you. Time is just flying by, and I can't believe it's already Royal Rumble time again. Here we are in January. And I thought, hey, what better thing to do than talk about the Royal Rumble 20 years ago? And that's what we're going to be doing today, talking about the Royal Rumble 2003. And, of course, we're on the heels of Armageddon 02, where we saw Triple H as the Raw World Champion defeat Shawn Michaels in a 3 stages of hell match. Kurt Angle is the SmackDown World Champion, having defeated Big Show. And now, of course, we're trying to see what's going to happen at the Rumble and then start charting the course for WrestleMania. Meltzer would say that the show on December 16th in Orlando was the first good Raw show in a long time. It was built around the Steiner contract signing as the main event. And Bischoff had promised Triple H a tribute as the main event. And when Steiner and Triple H were both asked to back off the spot, they refused. And of course, this is a little bit like art imitating life. I think at different times, Scott Steiner has had strong feelings about a lot of people in wrestling, but he was certainly a big star in WCW, dropping the WCW world title to Booker T on the very last Nitro. And he's a player. I mean, I don't know another way to say it. What was your experience like getting him signed, bringing him in, and these early instances where we're seeing him on TV? Were you happy with the way that was going? Just how was the Scott Steiner experience going thus far?
Well, I knew it would probably be a little challenging just by Scotty's nature. And I can't blame him. You know, you want your details and all the I's dotted and T's crossed when you're doing a contract. And it was a healthy contract, but it wasn't going to be a cakewalk, but it was probably his best option, quite frankly. I think WWE had the most leverage in that negotiation, but you know, he was a talent that had a lot of name identity. He was related to main events. So, I thought it was a good get, but you knew that Scotty's nature and his competitiveness, would, at somewhere rear its head. It did more often than not. So, I don't say that in a bad way. Just he took care of his business and could be hard to get along with at times. I really never had any issues with him. Cowboy had issues with him, which, you know, the Cowboy thing kind of buried me there at the end. I saw something Eric posted the other day. We talked about that a little bit. It's kind of interesting. So, but it was a good get, Connie. It was a good, he was a big star. We needed more star power, and we felt like he was going to provide that.
It's interesting to think about the Scott Steiner thing and how, from the outside looking in, you would say, well, this wasn't as successful as we would have hoped. And I'm sure we'll talk about that in the coming months, but he's starting off with a program with the top guy, with the world champ on the A show. Cause make no mistake, in this era, Raw was the A show, and he's not even going to be on WrestleMania. And we're going to talk about how we got sideways there. But speaking of WrestleMania, we start to set that up with Chris Jericho doing a promo saying that Shawn Michaels was his hero, but now he's washed up and he's the has-been kid. And of course that ends with Shawn Michaels laying out Jericho with a super kick, and Shawn Michaels has that ever so perfect timing. We know they're going to be on a collision course for WrestleMania. I'm curious, when you're thinking about in hindsight, how to best program Scott Steiner, this could go a few different ways, I'm sure. But did you think in hindsight, putting him straight away with Hunter, the world champ, was that the right call, or should we have warmed him up with some other talent before we put him in the world title picture?
Well, if you want the perception to be he's a star and he could be the next world champion, and he comes in very lauded, very with high expectations, not a bad place to start. And I also think it made him comfortable, a little bit more comfortable, because it shows that WWE was very serious when we were talking about with him that, you know, we're going to use you. You're going to be in a top spot, and let the cards fall where they may. And so it was, I don't think it was a bad thing. I mean, there's a lot of right ways to do a wrestling angle.
Yes.
There's a lot of right ways to get something to skin the cat, so to speak. So in hindsight, I had no major issues with that pairing.
Well, what's interesting is Meltzer's complimentary, saying that this gives the main event a fresh feel it hasn't had in a long time, because there was, you know, if you're dealing with the same talent, you fall into these ruts and it does start to develop a sense of a sameness.
Right.
But Meltzer would say this: most importantly, they're going to put Steiner on top right away before he has time to get injured. The other thing they'll need to do is keep Steiner out of the ring in serious matches on TV. He can do 1 minute squashes, but nothing more. The more people see him, as noted already at the house shows he's worked, the less over he gets. Now, I guess we should just address the elephant in the room. He came in injured. I mean, he's beat up. He's banged up. He's been in wrestling a long time. He's carrying a lot of weight. He's putting a lot of stress on those muscles and tendons and joints, and he's pushed it to the limit. And he is a genetic freak. And once upon a time, had one of the most dynamic moves in all of wrestling in the Frankensteiner. But that was 20 years prior, or 10 years prior. At this point, was drop foot and some of his other injuries that he had a major concern for WWE? Did you think we got to get as much out of him as we can up front? Or is that just Meltzer maybe trying to piece it together?
I don't know. I think we're obviously all aware of Scotty's physical limitations.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was, he came in, you know, with all, he brought those with him. You know, you mentioned the drop foot thing, and then he's torn. I don't know how many muscles he's torn. There were several serious surgery oriented and needed issues. So I think you want to get the most out of him you can as quickly as you can, not knowing how long he's going to stay healthy. And so that was kind of, that's how I looked at that deal. Get it while you can, and hopefully, knock on wood, he stays healthy and we get a little quote unquote run out of him. But it was to freshen up the roster, get a name on there that everybody in the wrestling world knew and was familiar with. So, again, you know, anytime we could do these shows, we go back and look, we can always discover ways to have done it differently that may have worked better than the original.
Right.
But, you know, it's like anything else, Connie. Hell, you don't know until you try it.
Right.
And that's kind of what we did. Let's try it and see where we are. And if anybody can get great matches out of Scotty in his injured and flawed physical state, it would be Triple H or Shawn Michaels, somebody like that. But Triple H raised his hand and got a new dancing partner. And so then our lot was, let's just wait and see how it's going to work out. You know, so that's where I see that matter. It was interesting to discuss, but I think at the end of the day, the smart money was let's get this thing started. Let's get a match in a ring. Let's go with this thing and see where it takes us. If we're lucky, we catch lightning in the bottle. If we're not lucky, then we kind of knew that this is going to be a challenging proposition.
Well, let's catch you up on what else is going on in WWE land. Kurt Angle is now with Paul Heyman. They're trying to get him set up for the whole Lesnar angle, because we know they're going to get together at WrestleMania. Tori and Al Wilson's story is going on with Dawn Marie, and it's announced that the wedding of Dawn Marie and Al Wilson is going to be taking place on SmackDown. As silly as it is, ratings have always been friendly to weddings, which I don't really understand.
Right, me neither.
And then Ernest Miller is here handling some backstage interviews, and I'm fascinated by that. I mean, this is a guy who just oozes charisma, or at least he did in WCW. Whose idea was it to say, hey man, let's just try him as a backstage interviewer?
I don't know. Eric may have had something to do that with a suggestion. I'm not sure, Connie. Wouldn't surprise me. They're buddies. And I like Ernest. I saw Ernest just a few months ago. And we hadn't had, you know, I think I let him go on Vince's command. So I could see where he would have a reason to not be in my fan club, so to speak. But he was really cool. And we talked it out, and it was like adults do. And I have a lot of newfound respect for Ernest. I know he's still doing his martial arts stuff and in the Atlanta area, I think.
Yep.
But I came to see Ernest as a more, as in a different light. And so that was good. Hey, look, we're trying different things. And that's what that was. Let's just try it. And so we were in the, let's try this thing. You know, I'd rather invest my time in Ernest than a wedding, but you know, that's how that worked.
Let's talk about some other creative from this era that I'm sure you remember, maybe not so fondly. Meltzer wrote this: Bischoff and Chief Morley were mad at Ross and Lawler because Ross said during a commercial that they should be worrying more about business and less about humiliating people, and we'd have a better TV show. There was so much irony in that. Bischoff threatened us with Tony Schiavone and Jesse Ventura as announcers, just when I thought Raw couldn't possibly get any worse. It was all to set up a match with Ross and Lawler in the main event. This is the first time I think I remember hearing Tony Schiavone's name mentioned on WWE programming since like 1990. What'd you think of this creative of, hey, we're going to threaten you guys with your jobs and then put you in a match? Well, this is silly.
Hotshotting. It was hotshotting in my view. You'll never hear me say, oh, I love that angle where I got in the ring. Never. And the reason I say that is my athletic skills and my wrestling training to take a flat back or to do anything to protect myself never happened, which, you know, was what it was. And it took time away from real talent, from real wrestlers. And I don't fit in that category. So I was willing to be a team player as always and do my best to not suck too bad. But, I wasn't crazy about it. I wasn't crazy about any of the angles I did because I just felt like it took time away from real wrestlers who needed the TV time. Simple as that. But hey, I went along with it and it was what it was. I don't know I know it probably sucked, but I don't know that it could have sucked worse, I guess. But you know, I was surrounded by some real good talent. Anytime your Lawler's your partner, you know, you're going to be in pretty good shape. He's going to keep the rudder in the water. And help me through the choppy waters, if you will. But you know, it was I don't know how the ratings were on that. I don't even remember. I think they probably were okay because it was unique. It's like a train wreck. You know, you got to stop and look.
Well, something we all stopped to look at was the arm wrestling gimmick, which, in hindsight, most of us would say, "Oh, that's lame." But man, they really did this really well. This arm wrestling angle. With Big Papa Pump and Triple H. I know it feels like it's something out of the 80s, but I mean, these guys have the great physiques that made the WWE what it was in the 80s. And I thought the execution of this angle was fantastic. And then of course, as our friend Bruce would say at the Royal Rumble, that damn bell had to ring.
Yeah. Whether you like it or not, we got to go.
The main event. I can't believe this is real. Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler wrestling William Regal and Lance Storm. They're going to end their winning streak at 8 weeks in a row. Meltzer would say it was your basic Christmas feel good deal. They've got the University of Oklahoma or the Oklahoma University Pep Band is what Meltzer calls it, which makes me happy. And they're playing the ring entrance for you. And then they play it again. And then the Dudleys hold you up on their shoulders. And this is a rare, you know, normally when they come to Oklahoma, well, JR's got to kiss somebody's ass, or we're going to pull his own head out of his ass, or we're going to break a cinder block over his head, or have Stone Cold cut his face. But yeah. Hey, you got a good day here. What happened?
What do you mean?
Why were they nice randomly? Like, goodness gracious. Well,
we didn't mention it. This was in Oklahoma City.
Yes.
As you may have mentioned that. And the Pep Band, for lack of a better term, turned out play the entrance. I thought that was a nice gesture by the WWE.
Absolutely.
I also think it was a way to get them out of the building and on their way back to Connecticut a little earlier. Cause when I got to the back, nobody was there. So much of the celebration. Oh, good job, JR. You pulled it through. And look, a lot of credit for how that match was perceived and executed goes to Regal, Lance Storm and, Lawler,
of course.
And so I just kind of followed along, tried to stay out of the way, and then did my little part wherever that was going to be. But I do remember that it left the crowd left feeling good. The ovation was outstanding. That was very cool for a fat old announcer to get that kind of deal. And the Dudleys doing their thing and hoisting me up on their shoulders. I'm just glad they didn't get hernias and stuff or lifting me or drop me. I was ready for that too. Because you never know when Vince says, hey, if you drop JR, it might not be a bad thing. You never know. So, but I've always thought that it was a way to get those guys to the airport so they could fly back to Connecticut a little bit earlier. So, but fine. It was all right. But the presentation I thought was pretty decent. That was far the best use of JR as a wrestler. I use that term very loosely. that we ever did while I was there.
Let's talk about the new angle that we're going to be introducing. Pardon the pun. Now there's a team angle. We're going to put Haas and Benjamin with Kurt Angle. This is one of the great groups of this era. Some legit amateur badasses, and we're going to put them together as a group. I mean, this is one of those things that could have went on much longer, I feel, than maybe it did. Just, I love the pairing. I love this trio. What'd you think?
I liked it. I liked them a lot. They're, you know, Sheldon, I said oftentimes that Sheldon was that one all-star class that we signed that included Lesnar and Batista and Cena and Orton and Shelton, and that by far the best pure athlete of the group that caught it quicker, that got it, so to speak, was Shelton. Sheldon's issues were always the fact that he, charisma-wise, just didn't directly connect to the audience. But athletically speaking, you know, Sheldon needed a manager. Sheldon needed a mouthpiece to help him move the needle a little bit. So Sheldon finally got a little break there, which I was very happy for. You know, Charlie Haas, an Oklahoma kid from Edmond, Oklahoma. And so I had a little special place in my heart for him. So it was, and of course, Kurt was one of our signees, and he was, I just thought that pairing had a lot of chemistry, and had a lot of symmetry, and had a lot of credibility. So I enjoyed that presentation a great deal for many different reasons.
Well, when the wedding finally takes place with Al Wilson and Dawn Marie had vowed to get married naked. Stephanie wouldn't let her do it, but she did let her get married in her underwear. The segment, Meltzer would say, as good as the Billy and Chuck wedding was, this was just as bad. And Al's going to get married in his tidy whities, as you see there, if you're watching along with us on YouTube. I don't know, man. I understand that this is sports entertainment, but this is maybe too much of the good stuff, huh?
Yeah, it was probably a forced deal. It was the entertainment side of sports entertainment. And sometimes those are dreaded. It wasn't a great idea. You know, everybody in it were good people. They tried hard. They were just doing their role, playing their role, know your role. If you smell what JR's cooking, somebody else did that already. So I don't know. It didn't have a great chance of succeeding.
No.
So, and so did they get the most out of it they could? I think they did, but it was bound to fail. It just was not going to happen.
We're wondering, is it going to happen? Is Kurt Angle going to be able to make it to the Royal Rumble? He shows up to these shows limping badly and people are concerned. We know he's going to power through and probably against all good damn common sense wind up going through with WrestleMania. But along the way, we get this debut match with Haas and Benjamin taking on Benoit and Edge. It's a DQ because Edge or Angle's going to interfere. But Meltzer would say this is a good debut and it gives them a strong first match. Were you concerned? I mean, I understand if we want to keep the Angle thing front and center. And if he's hurt, it makes sense to put two guys with him. And together, they look like a group of American gladiators, but they're legit badass amateur wrestlers. Were you concerned that, hey, Angle might not make it? Or had you guys already decided he's going to nut up no matter what?
Well, you can't count Kurt Angle out of, you know, he's just resilient as hell. And he worked through so many different injuries. And I thought it would be a relief for him to have two other guys that could basically be his surrogates in this scenario. And they were good surrogates. I mean, these guys could wrestle. And I love seeing them getting their opportunity and where they would run with it. It was refreshing. And it gave Kurt, the money guy in that trio was Kurt. So consequently, it gave Kurt a tag out. He could be at ringside. He could do promos. He could still maintain his exposure. Until he got healthier.
The next episode of Raw is going to see Rosie and Rico and Jamal and Batista beat the Dudleys. Bischoff is upset that the Dudleys had helped you and Lawler. So he's punishing them. And then in the middle of this same show, we have a 25-minute segment, which is a bodybuilding pose down, which might be the first one in history where the guys wore pants. But Meltzer would say this segment went brutally long. And I know that, you know, clearly that's part of the attraction of a guy like Scott Steiner. And there's lots of comments from Triple H like, hey, he's built for show, I'm built to go, blah, blah, blah. But they both legitimately do have a bodybuilding background. And as silly as this may seem here 20 years ago, back in the 80s, Rick Rude and Ultimate Warrior were doing these successfully. And it happened in a bunch of other territories, too. Right. Did this feel out of place, or did it feel like a throwback that we hadn't seen in a while? At least
I wasn't worried about the throwback aspect of it, Connie. And I can see where your point is and where you're going. But it felt real. It felt organic. And no issues with that. You got to, it's the same basic mindset that we just talked about Kurt. Having him at ringside, having him doing promos, maintaining his exposure on television was important because he was Kurt Angle, and he had a lot of money invested in him, and he was a star. So consequently, that's where that was in my view, that we maximized the minutes of the guys based on their physical limitations. It's just hard to book, man. It's hard to book when you got the stars you want to push are not physically ready to move forward. They need a little time out, so to speak. And so I think that worked out pretty well in that regard. The bodybuilding aspect was, it seemed like it fit. Both those guys have great bodies, as you said, Conrad, so eloquently, by God. I'm trying not to tear up here. But it made sense. It made sense. I'm with you, and it went way too long.
Yes.
It went way too long. But the concept in general was sound.
Well, the next episode of SmackDown is maybe a little less sound. We're going to see footage from the honeymoon of Al Wilson and Dawn Marie. And wouldn't you know it, Dawn is ready to go. But Al's dead. He stops breathing, and they bring in medics who are trying to revive him. Meltzer would say this was in poor taste. I don't really know how you would explain to someone if they walked into the room and you're watching this. What are you watching? Wrestling? What? What did you think of the honeymoon angle here with Al and goodness gracious.
I thought the same thing about the storyline in general.
Yes.
It was ill-fated. You're dealing with unskilled actors, unskilled wrestlers that have to become actors in a little segue here. Wasn't crazy about it. Just thought it would put those talents in a unattainable situation. And killing Al, I guess the physical exertion, hell, I don't know, but it was a strange scenario that had a equally strange finish.
In the Observer, Meltzer compares this to the Owen Hart circumstance. Yeah. That's a bit of a stretch for me. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a whole different deal. Whole different deal. Yeah, absolutely. And I understand Dave's, I get the logic, I assume. I don't necessarily agree with it. I think one was, I don't even know how you could compare it, to be honest with you. But he did, and there you go.
Well, speaking of the Owen circumstance, Vince meets with Bret Hart on December 18th at Vince's condo in Boca Raton. It's their first face-to-face conversation they had since Owen's funeral in 99. And Meltzer would say it was largely something that an intermediary suggested. Both felt compelled not to insult the other by backing out after everything that had gone down. McMahon had already agreed with no strings attached to allow Hart the use of his photos for his upcoming book shortly after Hart suffered his stroke over the summer. What do you remember about this meeting, and why do I feel like you may have been the intermediary?
Well, that happened. It was just a matter of, let's communicate here. If nothing else, maybe we could just clear the air. And I know that was going to make a lot of talents happy. A lot of our Canadian talents, you know, and American talents love Brett, and rightfully so. And that's based on respect. Brett was one of the most respected athletes in the history of WWE. And still to this very day, I consider him that. So it was just time to clear the air. Both those guys that had great success working together, you know, you don't foresee a stroke and things of that nature, but you never know. And so I was just happy that those two guys were willing to get together. A great location. I've been to that condo many times. Beautiful. You know, Vince don't go anything but first class. And he's always got a plan, as evidence right now. You know, I tried to keep up with that a little bit here lately with Vince's return to the WWE. I don't know where that's headed, but as I said to you before we started recording, you know, for any of us to think that Vince McMahon, even at 77, I think he's 77, something like that. He's older than me. And of course I'm old. so what the hell, you know, but for those who thought Vince is going to go silently into the night and never appear again, was crazy. And I guess the Conrad, I don't know, you may have kept up this better than me. But certainly, it looks like Vince is back to help negotiate a sale of the company. At least that's what it seems like. And I might be wrong on that deal too, but it seems like that might be the deal, that he's coming back to help orchestrate a sale. And, but then what?
Right.
You know, so it's going to be interesting days ahead for them. And I'm sure that the guys that work there are still trying to, you know, wonder what the hell's going on. My advice to them is just do your job. Come to work on time. Don't be a problem child. Don't be a baby. Be willing to go along with things to see how it's going to work out. And that's kind of where I see that whole scenario coming. There's more to the story than meets the eye, one would assume. And knowing Vince as well as I do, and other than Brucey, I may be knowing better than just about anybody on your ad-free network.
No doubt.
Working so closely with him for as long 26 years, you get a pretty good relationship established. And contrary to popular belief, Vince and I did have a very good relationship more often than not. It's just the fact that as a character, TV character, the character of JR was abused a little bit from time to time. And I tell you that, and without sounding like an egomaniac, it's because it worked.
Right.
The quarter hours always had a little bump. And so I was always hoping that it's when the ratings came out after one of those episodes, that it would suck pond water. So they would stop using me. But you know, you're a team guy. You can't be half-assed. It's like being pregnant.
Right.
You either are or you're not. Yeah. So you're either a team player or you're not a team player. I always wanted to believe that I was a team player from start to finish. And I still have that mindset. I'm not going to change my philosophy, you know, whatsoever. So, but it was interesting. It was interesting times, and we were trying so hard to embellish the sports entertainment side of the WWE television presentation. Pardon me. So, that's what it was. And it was, I think we tried too hard to get we were trying to balance sizzle and steak. And I'm always a steak guy. And I think most fans are steak people. They want to see action and they want to see a compelling story. There's nothing more important in pro wrestling than the stories. A lot of guys you can hire that can do amazing things athletically. All the high-flying stuff, the high-risk stuff. There's a lot of talent. That's how they've been taught. And so many of them, unfortunately, believe that's the only way to go to get over. And it's far from the truth. It's not accurate. Storytelling is your money. And we're just trying to come up with stories that people are going to be captivated by and like and accept. So That's kind of where I see that, Connie. It was a unique time. We were trying to be too much Hollywood, I think, and not enough wrestling.
What was the meeting like with Brett? Did you get a report back? I assume it's just the two of them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I suggested it, because you don't need an audience. You don't need an audience there to have a clear the air meeting. Cause then all of a sudden is this guy working me? Is he performing, or is this a true, honest, clean, meeting to clear the air and to communicate and to put some of these bad memories behind us? You can't keep celebrating. You can't keep remembering. You can't not continue to commemorate the Montreal Screwjob. And so getting past that and getting those two guys together, I thought was just healthy. I thought it was healthy for both guys. And to this very day, I still believe that.
The other big name in Vince's rearview mirror at that point was Hulk Hogan. He's actually going to do some media in Canada, where he says, the only way I would come back is if it was in a high road, positive fashion. He says, basically, he thinks wrestling needs to change. Quote, I'm doing this because I want to, not because I have to. It's fun. It's great. It feeds my ego. It feeds my family. It keeps me busy. It makes me feel worthwhile. But it has to be the high road for me. I have a hard time with my son explaining some things. Of course, I'm sure he's referencing things like Al Wilson having sex and dying and all silly nonsense. But Meltzer would say, well, he's coming out publicly like this because Vince isn't really keen on bringing him back. The relationship between Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon over the years has been categorized as love hate. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. And that's another one that you got to get past. I mean, Hogan, no doubt, had seen his better days in the ring. He's got a terribly flawed back. He's had multiple surgeries. And so he can't be booked like he was in his heyday in the 80s. We're talking, you know, it's just not there. So I thought that should have been taken more into consideration. I think that there's money in Hogan if used correctly. But using him correctly is not, he's not an everyday pitcher. He's going to be coming in and doing, you know, late inning relief or something. That was another one that should have been, the air should have been cleared. And let's forget about the past. Let's forget about the money issues or the creative issues and all those things. Let's get the personal side, because those guys had a strong personal side and it needed to be addressed, and you needed to get past that whole scenario. And so that's same deal with Brett. Let's put all this old trash behind us and move on. Not Brett was trash, but you know, the issues. And so that's kind of where I saw that, man. It was time to move on. And you could use Hogan to get other guys over if you played your cards correctly. The rubs, Hogan's rub would have been very vital.
Well, apparently some folks weren't happy that they weren't getting the rub with your Ross report on the WWE website. You're going to announce in January that you're going to shutter it, and you're going to cite your tough schedule, that you've been working on a book, and you have a feeling that what you write would sometimes create bad morale among talent if their names weren't mentioned or if they felt slighted. And it was also clear, Meltzer says, that you were bothered by other criticisms of what he said. And Meltzer would go on to say, it was Vince's call, not Ross's, to drop the report. What do you remember of this Ross report coming to an end? And was this the story that Meltzer made it to be?
Well, I think Vince, Vince made the call. It was making, you know, it was doing well. It was, I never got paid extra money for that.
Right.
And I didn't get paid extra money for the ones I did in Atlanta at WCW. And when I did the Saturday night version of the 900 number, I think it was the right call. I think in my position continued to grow as an executive, and it's ironic, you know, how Meltzer put that thing, but it's a lot of truth in it. You know, if talents weren't mentioned, then they felt like that was a slight to them, even though they may not have been at the top of the topical list on that day. But I certainly didn't want to interfere with their attitude or anything, pardon me, anything along those lines. So I think it was time. It run its course, and it gave me some time back to do my day job, as they like to say.
The next Monday Night Raw, we see Gene Okerlund pull up in a limo. Bischoff is there thinking it's going to be Vince McMahon showing up. Instead, it's Mean Gene for the anniversary show. Eric is lambasting him, saying he's stupid. And Okerlund has a funny line that says, well, if you were so smart, I'd be here for the Nitro anniversary. So Vince still loves, you know, poking fun at Eric here. And then we see it in the ring where Vince is threatening to fire Eric unless he can turn things around. So, of course, this is all just a big storyline. And we're getting ready for Royal Rumble. At times, it feels as if this show, as you made the comparison earlier, it's more sizzle than steak. There's lots of who's in charge of the show and who's marrying who. Were we losing our way a little bit here in 02 and 03?
I think so. What brought us to the dance was that physicality, athletic endeavors and athletic accomplishments and the skill sets of some of these great workers that we had. And all of a sudden now they're asked to become more than great workers in the ring, bell to bell. They're asked to become somewhat skilled actors. And, you know, you got to remember, these guys are coming to work on, let's say, a Monday. And they're getting their script, as it were, when they got to work. So they had to, quote, unquote, learn their lines while they were, you know, when they got to work. So they didn't have a lot of time to prepare. So unskilled actors, not having any time to learn their lines or to walk through things adequately and enough, was non-existent. So it put the talents at a disadvantage from the get-go. It just was going to be hard to make work good. It just wasn't going to happen. And it didn't happen.
Talk about, your boy, the 10th anniversary special, The World and NYC. It's a special show. It's kind of crazy. Here we are just a few days away from the 30th anniversary of Raw. And Trish is going to be named the Diva of the Decade. The show is, well, not great. Mick Foley won the Tell Me I Didn't Just See That award. And Booker T mentioned that Foley, who lives on Long Island, couldn't be there. And Meltzer would say the lack of importance this show had to either the people who didn't invite him or to him. And one of the all-time lifelong biggest fans of wrestling spoke volumes that everyone understood. And it got worse because The Rock is announced as the winner of the Best on Interviews in the history of Raw. And he also didn't appear. He was supposed to do a satellite interview, but it goes way too long and turns out to be another embarrassment to the point where the crowd boos him heavily and he keeps going and the crowd starts chanting boring. And I don't think anybody ever said that to The Rock. This show just feels like a misstep. No.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. All that satellite bullshit. It didn't work. If we had pulled it off in a reasonable amount of time, isn't it funny that most of the stuff that we don't like is because it went too long?
Yes.
And I think that if you watch television today, and of course we're all creatures of the television world, I noticed the length of time that many commercials have on NFL broadcast has shortened immensely. You don't see 60s anymore. Sometimes you don't even see 30 second commercials, but you see a lot of 15s. And that tells me that the research that these big companies have done tell me that people tune out, their short attention span, scenarios are not good. So I think that the timing of some of these things. And it's funny that the egos of wrestlers today, you know, you tell a guy, well, we want you to do a promo and we need, you know, 5 minutes or something. Well, that would be an eternity for me to stay hooked for 5 minutes on a promo, unless it's just extraordinary. And more often than not, they're not extraordinary. So the length of the time that we discuss on these things is, or that we've discussed, the time component is huge, and talents just got to understand it's not about how long you talk. It's about what you say. And was your promo structured to where you could have a beginning, a middle, and an end with a good finish.
Right.
Just like a match. So it's all about the storytelling. I said that earlier. It's not about how many hurricane runners you can do or Steiner lines or whatever. I'm kidding on that one. But you know, it's not smart business. Manage your times. And when talents go over, you can, it's easy to fix. If it's live, you just don't put them in a live scenario anymore for a while. Let them understand that what you did was wrong and you did it without any provocation. You did it because you wanted to be, have more TV time. And that's all well and good, but it's not necessarily right, quite frankly.
Speaking of not right, this show is going to end, and this is like the go home for all here, where Don is going to blame Tori for Al's death. Slapper, they start rolling around until Don busts up a gimmick lamp on Tori's head and they roll around on Al in the coffin. And this is the last segment on the Go Home SmackDown before the Royal Rumble, which is just unbelievable in hindsight when you think about it.
Yeah, I agree.
That nice little trivia note here. There's a fellow working the Velocity taping before SmackDown, dressing under the name Brian Danielson.
Yeah.
Wonder whatever happened with that young lad.
Pretty good hand, huh? Yeah, he went to Shawn Michaels school. He's one of those guys that I helped facilitate to go to Shawn's school. And you know, the eyes of the WWE were firmly on a lot of things I did, but he's too small. He's 5'8", you know, and but he had amazing, his character was about 6'6". His integrity was about 7 feet. And he's a huge addition to the AEW roster. And I know the big match building up now is going to be Brian and MJF coming up in a few weeks. 60-minute Iron Man match. And I'm very curious to see how that goes. It could be feast or famine, because I don't think that MJF has had a lot of 60-minute matches to know how to pace himself, to tell that story that continues to connect the dots, bing, bing, bing. I personally like Iron Man matches. We had one that especially I remember in, I think it was in England, where it was Cena. Was it Cena and Shawn? Or?
Yeah, 60 minutes.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
But look who's in the ring.
Yes.
And so I don't, you know, I'm not knocking Max. Max is our champion. But, you know, he's got to really prepare mentally and physically for a 60-minute story. And again, it's all about the stories. So I'm a big fan of both those guys, BMJF and Brian. But Brian Danielson is, I don't know who in the business, Conrad, right now. This is going to be controversial, perhaps. But the other websites need leaders. They need leaders. I don't know who's better in the business right now than Brian Danielson. I really don't.
Yeah. He's been the best wrestler in the world for many years, in my opinion. And, he's going to get to show everybody what he can do. And, we're finally here to the Royal Rumble. This is the 17th annual. The show is way down from the O2 Rumble. That show, which featured the return of Triple H in 2002, got 670,000 buys. This year we got 585,000 buys. Readers of the Observer gave it 66.6% thumbs up, which is really remarkable when you consider the world title match. Let's jump right into it. Our first match is Lesnar pinning Big Show in 6 minutes and 29 seconds. The stakes here are the winner gets the last slot in the Royal Rumble. So Lesnar is now going to get that number 30. Show is still suffering from a back injury, but he's still going to take some bumps. And he's even going to do 3 belly to belly suplexes and another belly to back suplex. So he's doing what he can for the young Lesnar here. Show delivers a choke slam for a good near fall after stopping Lesnar, giving the F5 to Paul Heyman. And then finally Lesnar hits the F5 with a little bit of help from Big Show and gets the pin here. 2.5 stars, you know, probably not the prettiest match ever, but it is one of those Clash of the Titans deals where you've got this next big thing, this monster in Brock Lesnar and a larger than life, literally persona in the Big Show. Pretty cool way to start the show here.
It was a good opener. It also speaks to the fact that I've mentioned here on the show before that I thought that Big Show was probably one of the most, fumbled pushes of anybody that I can recall off the top of my head in WWE. You don't book a guy just because he can do all those suplexes and you do them. One major bump for Big Show was enough. And it would even get Lesnar over more because he didn't have to do 10 things to beat you. And so I thought that was a little bit overdone. I admire Paul White's desire to try to be accommodating. I really do. And it was very professional of him in that respect, but it was wrong place being called. We could have got the same results with less physicality on a guy that was not quite 100%. And so that's, I thought the Big Show was booked in a kind of an awkward way more often than not. But in any event, it was a good opener, had a lot of star power. And, you know, if Lesnar had lost, it wouldn't have been a total shock because he's in there with the biggest athlete in the world. But the biggest athlete in the world was taking bumps like he was Juventud Guerrero.
Well, something that I don't think anybody would have ever imagined is that we would get to say the Dudleys are a 16-time tag team champion. They beat Regal and Storm here in 7 minutes and 24 seconds. Meltzer says that 16 title runs must be some kind of record. He thought the match was okay. He gave it 2¾ stars, but it's a nice payoff. As you may recall, it was 2-on-4 and they even bloodied up Bubba on the way to this show. So it's a nice little hooray to see Regal and Storm drop those titles to the Dudleys. And the Dudleys, man, they were over with this crowd. And of course, we tried them apart. Fans are loving them back together. This is good stuff here. I really enjoyed it. I'm a big Dudleys guy and 16-time tag team champion. Come on now.
Yeah, it's great in that regard. They deserved it. They worked their ass off, Bubba and Devon. And they needed to be together. It's just they got over. And so why take that joy and that enjoyment away from the fans who supported the Dudleys from their ECW days all the way to the big time and WWE? So I got a lot of respect for Bubba and Devon. And Bubba's turned into a hell of a broadcaster. You know, I'm a regular listener to Busted Open Radio, Dave LaGreca and all those guys, Tommy. You know, he's got a big crew there. My God, he's got, you know, Mickey James does a super job on that show. So they do really good work. But Bubba's turned into a hell of a broadcaster, I think. And he cuts to the chase. He doesn't mix words and he doesn't bullshit, which I think is a good trait for a broadcaster. Try not to bullshit. Just be truthful and straightforward and don't tell me how to make the watch. Tell me what time it is. That's all. All right.
Next up, something that we all wish we, had to do over again. Tori Wilson's going to beat Dawn Marie Wilson in 3 minutes and 36 seconds after a swinging neck breaker. Dawn comes out to no heat. Tori is dressed like Meltzer would call a schoolgirl, pure virgin hooker. I don't know what that means. I've never heard this.
God almighty. Before. Does he sit up nights and wonder about those descriptions? I don't know. Golly, man, that's an interesting scenario. That's an interesting way of describing somebody, but go ahead.
Schoolgirl, pure virgin hooker. I don't think those words have touched before. Anyway, he says she only got a tepid reaction. She's now this month's version of Kane, meaning a hot baby face killed by a horrible angle. Crowd was dead, just showing how much television time this thing is wasted. And then worse, after losing, Dawn Marie said that this feud, which has wasted more broadcast time in recent months than any others, must continue. He gave it a dud rating. I think we all mercifully gave it a dud rating.
That might have been being kind. There's another word below dud. You might want to use that one, but nonetheless, it was a dud.
Speaking of duds, here it is. We've talked about Scott Steiner at the top of the show. He is definitely the big star, the new focus, the new hot toy. This is going to be the fresh main event that Meltzer's been looking for, and he's going to challenge the Raw champ, Triple H, and he gets the win, but he wins by DQ, so Triple H retains. Meltzer would say this: suffice to say, Steiner looked terrible, and the Orange Assassin couldn't carry him. Ric Flair was the best worker in the match and the only one getting cheered, and he didn't even take any bumps. After one of his numerous belly-to-belly suplexes, Steiner went for the recliner, but Flair pulled Triple H out of the ring to safety. Steiner did four more belly-to-belly suplexes and then botched the double-arm powerbomb spot, nearly killing Triple H in the process. And the crowd booed both guys from this point forward and only wanted it over. Outside the ring, Triple H went for a title belt shot, but Scott blocked it and hit Triple H. After yet another belly-to-belly, Triple H threw Earl Hebner out of the ring. The storyline here that they were telling from the start is that Triple H was psyched out by Steiner and was looking for a way out. So Hebner refuses to disqualify Triple H, which only makes the finish a few moments later, where he did disqualify Triple H for a sledgehammer shot, that much worse. Fans were hating this bad. Triple H tried a second sledgehammer shot, but Hebner stopped him and Steiner got the sledgehammer. He nailed Triple H to the gut to a loud chorus of boos from the fans who just wanted both guys in the dressing room by this point. Steiner put Triple H in the recliner after the match and the entire crew broke it up. One star. Listen, I understand, you know, we've got a guy who can do a limited amount of things, but it feels like here we're asking him to work Triple H's style match as opposed to Triple H working his style match. I only say that because Triple H had a reputation, right or wrong, for having long matches on pay-per-view.
Right.
And you got to have the right opponent to do that. And the way we got over Magnum TA with Jim Crockett Promotions wasn't having him go out here and do these Bryan Danielson, Shawn Michaels, 60 minute Iron Man matches. And when the crowd wanted it over, I just asked myself, could they have called an audible here and cut the match short? Would that have created chaos everywhere? Or does Hunter have that levity even here 20 years ago?
Oh, he had the stroke. Hunter did. And his track record signs off on it. And he'd done some great pay-per-view matches. I think Hunter's best work was on these pay-per-views. And other than this one, I can't think of something off the top of my head that resonates as being too long or the game plan not being exactly on target. As it normally is in those big title matches. You also notice it was put in the middle of the show. So I think everybody kind of had an idea. We're only going to get so much out of this marriage. And hopefully we'd get out of it without anyone getting injured. But it was a tough deal. We said earlier, we're going to try something and see if it works. And if it worked and you got a new opponent for the championship, Triple H has got a new dancing partner, which needed to be freshened up, but it didn't work. And so the quicker you can kind of get out of that scenario and put Triple H back in the ring with somebody that was not injured or injury harmed, you'll be better off. So that's kind of where I see that, Connie. We tried. And, you know, I don't think any of us fully realized in how bad a shape Scotty was with his various injuries and things of that nature. And look, let's not forget the fact he wasn't a spring chicken.
Right.
He had been working for a long time.
Yes.
It had a lot of injuries.
Yes.
So I don't know how we could be shocked that it wasn't good, but I was a little bit more shocked. If I was going to be shocked about anything, is that those fellas went too long.
When, you know, listen, wrestling fans online, and sometimes they decide who their favorites are. You've seen this. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, a lot of folks decided in this era, we don't like Triple H. And I can't help but wonder, when he comes back through the curtain, does Vince already know, okay, the bloom's off the rose with this Steiner thing, let's do our best to move on? Or is Triple H coming back and saying, Vince, this guy, he ain't got it? I mean, it had to be just apparent, right?
Oh yeah. It wasn't a secret. It wasn't a secret whatsoever. It was obvious. Again, we wanted to try something that we thought, if it worked, was going to be a good thing. It just didn't work.
The conspiracy theorists out there, the Steiner defenders, would say, hey, he was sandbagging Scott. Did you buy into that?
No, hell no. Triple H is not going to go out there and have a stinker on purpose.
I can't imagine.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Look, it's going to sound bad. He's a professional. Triple H, he, pronoun boy.
Yes.
He's his ego. And I say that in a good way. He's got a lot of pride. He's not going to go out there and stink up the joint on purpose.
Right.
It's just he couldn't do any more with Scotty, and they needed to call some audibles, and one of those audibles would have been to shorten up the match. The second audible would have been that Triple H went over.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that the DQ thing, who did save? Who, you know, what? I think DQ finishers are so overused, and they don't mean as much as maybe they did in a previous generation, where, you know, you're seeing guys are wrestling a lot and like a territory, you know, type thing, where you're in the same market a lot, things like that. A lot of audibles could have been called, but that wasn't how it went down. But the thing that of all of it, the two things stand out. The match went too long, and Triple H should have gone over. Simple as that, in my opinion.
Let's talk about who did go over here. You want to talk about an incredible match, 4 3/4 stars. Meltzer would even call this next match. Let me make sure I get this right. Who turned in a match of the year caliber performance, waking up a dying crowd who was hating the show. Super high praise. And listen, I get a lot of folks for whatever reason. Well, we know the reason. They're not comfortable watching a Chris Benoit match, but if you are, this is a forgotten great one. Kurt Angle is going to retain the SmackDown title over Benoit in nearly 20 minutes. Meltzer would say the success of this match speaks volumes for the past 6 months or so of educating the audience towards submissions that really work, as this exact match 18 months ago in the same position would have died. They did another series of trading German suplexes until Benoit did the one where Angle flipped all the way over and landed on his stomach. Benoit did a diving headbutt at least 2/3 of the way across the ring for a near fall, followed by a crossface. Angle escapes, hits Angle Slam for a near fall. Angle counters the crossface with an ankle lock. Benoit escapes, but Angle gets the ankle lock on again. Benoit tries to escape, but as he's about to, Angle switches it to a heel hook and Benoit taps out. The fans then gave Benoit a loud standing ovation for the quality of the match, 4 3/4 stars. Now, remember, this is 03. This is a year before Benoit's WrestleMania moment, but right here, man, after maybe some of the matches we've seen with Don Marie and maybe a stinker with Scotty, this was unbelievable. And maybe one of the forgotten great matches of the era.
Yeah, I agree with that. Those guys really, really delivered. And, you know, it's just, there's a lot of things that are a shame, who could be ashamed of in pro wrestling. And I was ashamed that, we had to live through that tragedy involving the Benoits and Nancy and Daniel, and all that stuff. You know, I was the guy that was anointed to go to the funeral. So I had Vince called me the night before, or maybe the afternoon before. I was here in Oklahoma because we just opened our second or maybe our first barbecue restaurant. And I was up to my gonads in that kind of celebration and opening and having a presence at the restaurant so people could see JR if they wanted to. And so I had to fly to Florida, which was a photo finish. They picked me up at the airport. They picked me up at the airport. Some limo company took me to the church and for me to attend. And you talk about dirty looks. It's as if I did something wrong. I was there to show support, but because I was representing WWE, I was not a welcome guest at that service. And I thought that was very, very unfair. Really, just terribly unfair. It made me feel like made me feel guilty for whatever I didn't even, when you feel guilty, Conrad, about things that you didn't do, you got to evaluate a little bit here, you know, come on. So, it was tough, but I've said this before, Chris Benoit will never go into any major halls of fame.
No.
Because, and I think, and I've said this before, and I knew Chris very well. And I remember for WrestleMania 18, Shannon and I went to dinner with he and Nancy, and Chris almost got into a scuffle with Scott Hall, who had too much to drink. And that didn't happen, thank goodness, on the Saturday night before WrestleMania 18. So it was an interesting weekend, to say the least. But I, I don't know. I wish things, you know, for a lot of common sense reasons had not gone down like they did. But I'll never not respect the wrestler that Chris Benoit was. I don't know how you process, or you can't justify, nor should you try, his last few days on earth. Cause I can't explain that. Well, he had a concussion deal. He had CTE and I don't know what he had.
Right.
For sure. And I don't know that anybody knows for sure.
No.
Did they do a brain thing, a brain examination, Conrad, do you recall on Benoit?
Yeah, he did have CTE.
Yeah. And still, we don't know a lot about CTE, even NFL or wherever, boxing, MMA, whatever it may be. It follows you around in those contact sports where you're getting hit in the head. And so, anyway, I don't know why I got on that tangent, but I felt more badly that Chris committed suicide and killed his family, obviously. That's a lot bigger story. You know, like the kid in Buffalo that had the heart attack on the game. And, you know, the story was the heart attack. Is this guy going to live? Not who's going to play cornerback for the Bills, you know? So, things have come more in perspective. But I'm in a really crossroads. Conflict. What is it?
Conflicted.
Conflicted. Exactly. See, that's why you're the host. you're the star of the show here. I don't know why it's called the Ross Report. JR. What is it called? JR. Anyway, JR Grilling. Grilling JR.
We'll get it.
Yeah, we'll get it right. We've been doing it 30 years. That's why I should retire.
Oh, come on now. So listen, I know we talked a little bit about Benoit there, but I want to give some kudos to Kurt Angle. I want to remind everybody he's fresh off a knee surgery. We know he's going to need neck surgery. He's had two knee surgeries. He's working in less than condition. There's no other way to say it. He's wearing a knee brace. I mean, he's not even, so we're wondering, can he make it to WrestleMania? And he goes out and puts on a clinic. If you can watch a Chris Benoit match, this is one of the best matches in WWE history. But if you can't, I understand, but we got to give Kurt Angle his flowers. Yep. This match was what it was because of Kurt.
Yeah, and it just proves that when you recruit thoroughbreds, you expect them to run, you expect them to win, and to come out on the other side better than they went in. And Kurt did that more often than not. He just was an extraordinary athlete. He was an athlete, and still is, that was always above. He was a lot better than sometimes given credit for because he made things look so easy. And because of that, sometimes Kurt doesn't get the flowers, as you mentioned, that he deserves. And but that was a clinic. And like Conrad said, you know, if you've sworn off Benoit matches and you just say, well, I'm never going to watch another Benoit match as long as I live, blah, 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 that's cool. I get it.
Yeah, I
get it. But the thing about it is that if you are a fan of wrestling, just wrestling, Not the salacious bullshit that it, all this enveloped. It's fun for a wrestling fan just to watch a wrestling match. This was one of the better ones that I've called, and ever. So, and boy, it came at the right time, did it not? At the Royal Rumble, we needed a hit in that slot, and we got it.
An all-timer. Let's talk about the main event, the Royal Rumble. It goes on last, and they announced beforehand that they're going to be doing the intervals a little differently. They explained that it's going to be another wrestler coming in every minute. On the pregame show, though, they announced that it's going to be the traditional 2 minutes. And then during commentary, they say it's going to be 90 seconds. Not that any of this matters, but Meltzer made sure to tell us all about it. It goes 53 minutes and 41 seconds, and Brock Lesnar is your winner. Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho open. Christian comes out. That gives Jericho a little bit of an edge. He's going to distract Shawn Michaels, and they actually destroy Shawn with a chair shot here. Shawn's going to get some color, and Jericho eliminates Shawn in 2.5 minutes. Nobody predicted Shawn getting eliminated early, and that's what made the Royal Rumble so fun. This is Jericho's Rumble. I think most people would agree he probably should have been one of the final four. That doesn't happen. Michaels makes that old Spirit of 76 comeback. But Jericho does throw out six guys, which is the most. And I think he lasted the longest here. He's going to go 39 minutes and 54 seconds. So we're telling a story here within the match that sets up a big WrestleMania match with Jericho and Shawn Michaels. This is Jericho's show, man. And he did great in the spot.
He proves once again that no matter what year it is, what decade it is or whatever, he has a show stealing ability that few ever achieve. Chris is doing, I've said this before, and it, of course I don't want to get heat. Goddamn heat. Goddamn Kenny and everything. He still steals the show. He's the most cerebral, intelligent guys that knows how to enhance and protect his character, his TV persona. And so, last week we did, when we did Rampage in beautiful Portland, there are four of us, Excalibur, Tony, myself, and Chris. I thought it was one of the best commentated shows that I've been on in a long time.
Right.
The four of us worked really well together. Everybody's unselfish. We all like each other. And so the chemistry was there. But Chris is so good at so many things, whether it be acting as a faux manager, as a heel, as a babyface, as a commentator. He's good at everything that he does because he applies himself and he prepares for success. So I'm a big Chris Jericho fan, and I'll just say this. AEW is lucky to have a lot of the talents we have, without question, and he's certainly right at the top of that list.
No doubt. Undertaker is going to come out and really clear house. He's going to throw out Cena, Jamal, Maven, and then the finish. Undertaker is going to give Batista a tombstone, clothesline Batista over at 52-56. Then Undertaker and Kane act like they're going to join forces against Lesnar. Undertaker then double crosses Kane, throws him out. Batista comes back in the ring after Undertaker, but Undertaker clocks him with a chair. And that gives Lesnar the opportunity to come from behind and toss him out. Ultimately, Undertaker congratulates Lesnar for winning. And that's the end of the show. 3.25 stars. So listen, it's Taker's big return. It feels like a big thing. He's going to give Batista the rub in the process. We've definitely set up Angle and Lesnar now. We know we've got Jericho set up with Shawn Michaels. We don't yet know what Hunter's going to do. It's going to wind up being Booker T, but that's a story for another day. Overall, I thought this was an okay show, but it really made it for me with the last two matches. Yeah. I thought Kurt Angle and the Royal Rumble stole the show. Overall, though, I'd say thumbs up. What say you? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs down?
I think it was a thumbs up, and barely, but still got that thumb up. Like you said, we know what the show savers were.
Yes.
They're very obvious. And so, like I said, I think when the guys in the Royal Rumble saw Angle and Benoit delivered. Yes. I think it motivated a lot of people. I really do. I think it motivated a lot of people that, hey, look, these son of bitches are out there killing each other. They're having a hell of a match. We better do something to follow this thing. And so you have your tent poles. Every Royal Rumble has a tent pole or two or three. And, you know, where you got a cluster of guys getting eliminated by one guy who's going to get a little shine. And, we had that here. Jericho had his moments, and certainly Undertaker had his moments, and it was designed to get Brock Lesnar over into that spot. So I'm with you, Conrad. I mean, we can pick holes in it. I'm not going to say that the wedding and the match of Dawn Marie and Tori took the show to the bottoms of hell, but I'm not going to go there because I don't think it was ever meant to be successful. I don't know how it could have been successful. So, cause it was just ill conceived. And
well, something that's not ill conceived is JRsBBQ.com. We can't get out of here without talking about that wonderful JRsBBQ.com. I just saw a tweet over the weekend. I don't know if you saw it, Jim, but somebody said, hey, I didn't know what to think, but I took Conrad's advice and tried some of the all-purpose seasoning on the popcorn. And he said, it's a game changer. If you haven't tried it yet, why not? cruise on over to jrsbbq.com. Inspired by mama, enjoyed by you. This is the famous Ross family recipe, of course, now that his lovely wife, Jan, helped make so popular. And
yep.
People are still enjoying it all these years later. The Chipotle ketchup, the Main Event mustard, the regular barbecue sauce, now the hot barbecue sauce, and now an even hot sauce, plus the jerky, the all-purpose seasoning. Something for everybody at jrsbbq.com, including, I can't believe this is real, autographed trading cards, autographed action figures. It's all at jrsbbq.com, right, Jim?
Yeah, absolutely. And business has been good. People, like you said the other day, were spending that Christmas money, and we are very grateful for the business. The JR's Red Ass Hot Sauce is a hit. It's getting over. It's getting over. I can't even talk in regular language anymore. Everything's wrestling. But it's getting over. And I'm really glad to hear that, because it's a good product. God Almighty, it took us a year to get it developed. And I tasted so much hot sauce, I thought my tongue was going to fall out of my mouth. But we finally found what we wanted and not going to compromise. So it was good stuff. And I'm signing later today. I'm doing a bunch of signing, a bunch of things, a bunch of items that people have purchased. So if you've bought something and to get it signed and you're waiting, it's going to be signed as we record this later today. So we keep busy. We work hard, and I really appreciate the business. It's really great for us. And it just, again, it's a tribute. This is going to sound crazy, but I have yet to take a dime out of the site.
Really?
Nope. I will someday when it's at a level that I believe it needs to be. But right now I've reinvested 100% of every sale back into content and product development and things of that nature. Stephen Link does a great job of managing the site. He's become friends with a lot of our customers. And we appreciate Stephen's efforts and appreciate everybody else's support. I saw an interesting tweet. You mentioned the tweets where, the lady was talking about the mustard.
Yep.
And she said, I can't believe that we my husband spent money on a wrestling announcer's mustard until I tasted it. And then she went through the refrigerator and threw all the other mustards in the refrigerator away. There's one mustard in the fridge of this customer's home, and it's our mustard. It's got 1 gram of sugar. It's got jalapeno in it. It's good, not to the point that's going to run you off. Now, if you took a big swig of the Red Ass JR hot sauce, you might want to reevaluate, because it's going to get your attention. But I love those kind of stories where I can't believe you spent money on a wrestling announcer's mustard. How can it be good? Why should it be good? Well, taste it, and you'll find out. You'll answer all your own questions. So
let me just read it for you. Sir Smokes a Lot tweets out, I can't back the egg comment, but I can back the best mustard one. My wife went from, why are we getting the wrestling announcer's mustard, to it replacing every other mustard she used. Bratz, dogs, burgers, sandwiches, whatever. The flavor enhances whatever it's on. Here's another one from Your Hero. He says, the mustard is the best I've ever had. Try it on your eggs. Misty made some ribs for her family, and she says, the ribs came out fantastic. I used the JR's Barbecue Main Event mustard and Meat Church's Holy Gospel and Texas Sugar. The coach says, if you haven't tried JR's BBQ sauces and mustard, you're missing out. Highly recommend. Listen, I'm telling you, it's not just us bragging about the product here. Folks who try it, love it. And I get it. You're a wrestling collector. You've probably bought a bottle for display. Buy two. Just try it. See what you think. And I'm telling you, you're going to be in what we call a reorder situation. And we hope that you're in a reorder situation for adfreeshows.com. Maybe you missed it, but we recently sat down with Eric Bischoff and Nick Patrick, and they talked together for the very first time about what really happened at Starrcade 97. We called it the Fast Count, and it's on demand anytime over at adfreeshows.com. We've got another premium watch along event coming up before you know it. At the end of the month, just in time for the 35th anniversary of the very first Royal Rumble. That's right. The first Royal Rumble was 35 years ago. Easy for me to say. 1988. We're going to watch it with the guy who won it, Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Join us on January 24th at 9 p.m. Eastern at adfreeshows.com. But maybe my favorite piece of content, because it's been so well received, And I'm going to make sure you get an advanced copy of this, Jim, and you get to take a look.
Okay.
We welcome Mr. David Crockett to adfreeshows.com.
That's great.
We have his brother's red books. These are the books where J.J. Dillon wrote down all of Dusty's geniusing day by day, all the towns, all the matches, all the gates, all the specifics, a real peek behind the curtain of the creative process and the business of the wrestling business. Jim Crockett Jr.'s personal books. We go over it day by day, month by month with David Crockett. We kick it off with January 85. And don't forget, 85 is the year where they get TNT or they get TBS back from Vince McMahon. And he uses that money to launch WrestleMania. It's going to be a lot of fun this year. It's called The Book with David Crockett, and it's over at adfreeshows.com. I love adfreeshows.com. I think we've created a really cool opportunity for wrestling fans who love the nostalgia. They can get stuff they can't get anywhere else. And The Book is a perfect example of that, isn't it, Jim?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's a piece of history, Conrad. You'll see Dusty's handwriting. I don't know if you're going to show any, how many pictures of the book you're going to show.
Constantly.
I could pick out Dusty's penmanship from a mile away. And, I love this kind of stuff. I mean, if you want to know how things are booked and how it's organized and all that good stuff, I mean, there's nothing else in the business like this.
Yes.
This is the most unique thing because Mr. Crockett, Jimmy, kept copious notes.
Yes,
and they didn't throw anything away in that regard.
No.
So I'm with you. This is going to be a big hit for ad-free shows. And what helps ad-free shows helps all of us that are working on it to make it bigger and better and more profitable.
Well, we greatly appreciate that. And we also want to remind everybody that we're having a lot of fun with these brand new t-shirts. Grillingjrts.com is where you need to be. You can take a look at grillingjrts.com and you can see lots of fun new t-shirts. It always comes down to cash and creative. How about a little JR visor? Seen him on the sideline with those before. We got the plush buddy. Where's my push, damn it? And who could forget Red Ass JR? This is all available at grillingjrts.com. And, in the meantime, we'd love to have your subscription, to our YouTube channel. We're going to start producing some behind the scenes content, a little bonus action. You can check us out there at grillingjr on youtube.com. That's grillingjr on youtube.com. Interact with us. You see our social handles there as well. At JR's BBQ on Twitter is where you can find Jim. At Jim Ross BBQ on Instagram. And of course, follow along with the show at JR Grilling on Twitter and Instagram. I don't know what I expected from today's show, Jim, but it was fun. And I'm looking forward to next week because we'll be talking about the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. You knew him long before he was the Million Dollar Man back when he was in the South. And we're going to talk about all the comings and goings and everything that happened with the one and only Ted DiBiase.
And every day something major seems to be happening in wrestling.
Yes.
You know, the return of Mr. McMahon. Is he going to be Mr. McMahon? Or is he going to be Vince?
Right.
What effect, if any, is he going to have on the creative? There's a lot of things that have yet to be determined. It'd be fun just keeping up, peeking at it and seeing what's going on. In the meantime, and as Ed Whalen would say in Calgary, and in between time, we're going to kick some ass with AEW. We've got some big plans coming up. We just need to get everybody healthy. And getting Kenny Omega back is huge. He's in that same Bryan Danielson category of who's better. And Kenny's just he's a gift for the AEW. He's a gift for us to have on our roster. We need to get everybody healthy and back on the same page. Getting everybody back on the same page that have been separated is a big thing. It's a really big thing. So in any event, good, exciting things are on the horizon. And I'm happy to be a part of it, quite frankly.
And that'll do it this week, Jim. We'll be back next week talking about Ted DiBiase. Thanks for the time today. And we'll see you next week on As the Vince Turns, right? Goodness gracious.
Absolutely. And don't forget to watch Rampage. A new emphasis has been put on Rampage. His cards have been bulked up and more star power. And I'm excited about that. You know, you want to build your brand. And I'm on this Rampage brand right now. And I'm loving every minute of it, quite frankly. Because we do have that great broadcast team. We're getting bigger and better matches. Tony Khan's doing a great job of booking more meaningful content, in my opinion. And so check out Rampage TNT on Friday nights. just check your local listings. It's 10 o'clock Eastern, if you care, and you should care. And so it's good. It's all good. Business is good. I'm supporting the Jaguars. They've become my NFL team, and for obvious reasons. But man, they're hot right now, and as they say in the sports world, they're not the team you want to play right now.
No,
they're pretty damn hot. And Trevor Lawrence, even though he had a less than great game against Tennessee, it was a great game to watch on television as a TV. I got home in time to see it all, so I was very happy. So go Jags, and Conrad, you're the best. We had a good show today. It was interesting. It's fun to go back and say, well, we could have done this, we could have done that. But yes. But here's the reason we did this, mm-hmm. even though it may not have worked perfectly. So it's because sometimes this is an imperfect art form. It's always going to be that way. So in any event, we appreciate everybody's business and support. Quite frankly, it's been great. And I love doing this show.
I do too, man. And I can't wait to do it next week with you right here on Grillin' JR with the voice of wrestling, Mr. Jim Ross.
And eat more barbecue.
Well said.